Tripped in towards Lewandowski!
Magnificent from Cristiano Ronaldo!
Harry Kane won in England!
Ibrahimovic! Oh, he certainly made the most of that!
You're listening to the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast.
Hello and welcome to our second show from Paris. I'm Rob Daly. We're bringing you the latest from here in France through the tournament. And as always, we have the biggest names, including Gerard Piqué and Aaron Ramsey.
We're quite difficult to score against. We work our socks off for each other and we have quality going forward. And we're enjoying every minute of it, so hopefully we can carry this on.
The tournament has already seen its fair share of big moments.
Luka Modric with a stunner.
Eric Dier scores!
Bale strikes it well!
And we speak to our team of correspondents based with national teams up and down the country on the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. With me on the second edition of the show again is Tom Kell and Chris Parrott. Gents, great to have you back on the podcast again. We've been enjoying UEFA Euro 2016 so far. What sort of weird and wonderful things have you seen, Tom?
I went to the opening game and I enjoyed seeing a couple of Mexicans in giant sombreros, which was unexpected.
Sorry, Mexicans for France, Romania?
Yeah, that is correct, Rob. Yeah, I actually went into Paris today and played my own version of Euro supporters bingo. I think I ticked off about 10 out of the 24 teams.
Did you? Very impressive. Who's the most prominent group of supporters then in the capital?
Undoubtedly the Irish.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah, I saw them pretty much everywhere I went.
Chris, what about you? Because I know you've been down into not only going to games, but going to the fan park in Paris you're quite a fan of.
Yeah, there's a huge one next to the Eiffel Tower. 90,000 people it can hold.
90,000?
I went there on Sunday night amid an enormous thunderstorm. Groups of Irish, Northern Irish and English fans cowering underneath the tree, desperately trying to crane their necks around to see the screen. It was so English, but it was brilliant. People enjoying a kickabout.
I heard there's people having a kickabout in the fan park.
Yeah, football's everywhere. People showing off like sporadic games of two or three aside, and you just have like a Romanian, you know, shooting against a Turkish fan in goal. It's just that it's great. It's football everywhere, basically. You can't miss it in Paris. There were two unbelievably good Irish kids. They must have been about 10, 12 brothers. First of all, they were playing kick-ups with footballs, and then they just picked up wood chippings and knocking it to each other.
How did they do that?
No idea, but we will be speaking about them in Euro 2024.
Oh, yes, indeed. OK, lots to get through on today's show, and we'll start with talking about the Republic of Ireland. They played out a 1-1 draw with Sweden, Tom. You hear from a lot of the players. Seamus Coleman said after that we sat back too much and allowed them to get back into the game.
I actually thought Ireland were a bit more positive than perhaps many people expected them to be. Certainly more positive than they were 4 years ago under Trapattoni.
Yeah.
A point on the face of it is not a bad result, but when you look at the group, maybe that was their best chance for 3 points.
That's the problem. I mean, Seamus Coleman has since said we're looking for 3 points now against Belgium, given the nature of their defeat to the Italians in Lyon. But would you back the Ireland team to get something in that game?
I'm not sure about Belgium, and I don't want to give too much away about my upcoming surprise result of match day two.
Oh, okay.
But I think they might beat Italy.
Let's talk about Belgium a little bit here, Chris, because I was in Lyon to see them beaten 2-0 by the Italians in the end. Belgium take on Ireland next. Mm. Where do things go wrong for Belgium in that game against Antonio Conte's side?
Mark Wilmots has got fairly big selection decisions to make. Fitting them into a team with balance is maybe a bit more tricky. Certainly a lot of Belgium supporters would like to see Kevin De Bruyne play in a central role, and maybe instead of playing Fellaini, Nainggolan and Witsel, you play two of them, and then that means that you can bring in Carrasco or Dries Mertens.
So is it a case that it's too many similar type players in that position on the pitch?
Perhaps, or just two of those would give you enough cover in a central area. And Kevin De Bruyne looked a little lost out on the right. He's been so good when he's played centrally for Manchester City this season, particularly in this format when there's a round of 16 now and three teams from many groups will go through. You can afford to lose your first game. If you lose your second game, though, all of a sudden things become more tricky.
Yeah,
so I think Belgium's next game against Ireland is massive. for both teams, particularly for Belgium, having lost their first.
Let's hear from Ireland's goal scorer from that 1-1 draw with Sweden, Wes Houlihan.
I think first half we dominated, we created a lot of chances. Then we got the goal, we kind of set back, and they got the goal to equalise, and then we came again. And, we were unlucky not to come away with the 3 points. We've got a great team spirit and the team and the camp, and we showed that today, you know, from the 23 of us. We've got a good unit here, and hopefully we can that continue.
Wes Houlihan there, he scored a wonderful, wonderful goal in that game. And he's a real technical player, which is probably what the Republic of Ireland needs to break down teams. So Ireland to take on Belgium next, and there's Italy against Sweden. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Tom, couldn't find a way through. And he's certainly going to have a tough job against an Italian back line of Barzagli, Bonucci and Chiellini that were so resolute against Belgium in their first group game.
I think Antonio Conte said in the weeks leading up to the tournament that the only selections that he was absolutely certain about was his defence. Everything else was up for grabs, but his back line and the goalkeeper, he had no doubt about it. And you can see why. They're all seasoned campaigners. They all know what they're doing. And that's really the foundation of the team. It doesn't matter that they don't have the recognised striker that perhaps some of the other teams have. Their defence is going to be very hard to breach. And if you're not conceding goals, then you're halfway there.
I think they looked extremely well drilled as well. Everyone seemed absolutely on with what Antonio Conte wanted. There was a real sense at the end that they celebrated not like they'd won just the first group game. There was a fantastic celebration where Gigi Buffon ran the length of the pitch, tried to hang on the crossbar and fell off. But yeah. You know, the fact that he was running the length of the pitch, everyone was in front of the Azzurri fans in there, and there was a togetherness which there's many things that win you a Euro or make you go far, and that is one of them. And
well, I mean, I was very impressed with the way that Eder and Pella were combining as a front two, sort of a big man, little man type thing going on, which was very promising for them. And I suppose a win, Chris, and a win in your first group game, and you're in a wonderful position to get through to the next round.
Yeah, you are. I mean, you can wrap it up in your next game. And maybe the pass of the tournament, although we will speak about Andres Iniesta. Bonucci, he's a fantastic defender, but what a ball for Giaccherini's goal.
Oh, yeah, absolutely stunning. By the way, I rented an apartment when I was down in Lyon for the Belgium-Italy game. And when I got there, there was a note from the woman who owned the apartment that said, "Can you please feed my cat?" Right? So there was a cat in the apartment. And all night, I think I got about two hours sleep, because it was just going all night. And we fed it. We gave it water.
The cat was probably, might be wrong, sleeps in the bed
it's
of the owner.
It's not my cat. I can't be doing that, mate.
Yeah, but if it's crying in the middle of the night, whatever.
Tom, have you got a solution? What would you have done in that scenario?
Rob, what noise was it making again?
Meow.
Excellent.
Verbatim. Next up, we're going to be talking about Austria-Hungary, Portugal and Iceland, all in Group F.
Follow UEFA Euro 2016 on the go.
Not convincingly cleared, and there's Müller. Wouldn't you just know it?
It is Bale. It's a second for Wales.
Download the official app now.
Let's focus now on the smallest nation to be involved in UEFA Euro 2016, Iceland. And let's catch up with our correspondent with the national team, Jóhanna Alafá Sigurðsson. Jóhann, thank you very much for coming on the show.
My pleasure.
Jóhann, where are you and where are the Iceland team based?
We are based in Annecy by the Alps, in a very picturesque city. I know they went golfing once, so they've at least made it out of the hotel.
Well, that's good to hear. What do you think the feeling is in the camp at the moment? Obviously, you're speaking to the head coaches and the players at the moment. Do you sense there's a real sense of positivity in the team?
The ones I spoke to yesterday were very positive, of course, very happy, and very happy with a superb point and a superb performance.
They got that 1-1 draw. Bjarnason with the equaliser after Nani's opening goal for Portugal in that 1-1 game. Given how Iceland performed in qualifying, were you surprised, Jóhann? I mean, we saw them beat the Netherlands in qualifying as well.
I wasn't particularly surprised. I mean, the ones who follow the team know what they're capable of when they play their game. You know, defend as a team throughout the game, run for each other. So it wasn't a surprise, but maybe the first game of a major tournament, so you didn't know what to expect, really.
What does it mean for Iceland to be involved in this tournament?
I think it means the world to Iceland. I mean, it's not a place where we expected to be. So especially getting results like yesterday, it's just, I think it means the world to Icelandic football and just Icelandic people as a whole.
Why are Iceland difficult to beat?
Highly organized, they're very compact, sit deep without the ball, close down space as well, they defend as a team. You know, we don't have any superstars, so it's everything is about the team. So I think that's mainly why it was so difficult to break down.
So Johan, Iceland have two head coaches. How does that work?
Well, Lagerbäck took over at the start, Hallgrímsson was his assistant manager, so now they're joint managers, and Hallgrímsson will take over once the Euros finish. They just work superbly together. The players have talked about it themselves. They're just the perfect couple.
And let's talk about Gylfi Sigurdsson as well. I know you spoke to him after the 1-1 draw with Portugal. Would you say, you say the team has no star names. I suppose he's as close to one as they get.
Yeah, that's true. He's as close as you get. But, I mean, there's no, you know, superstars like Ronaldo, etc. But he's just such a down-to-earth guy. And it's all about the team for him as well. So you could just see it when you when I spoke to him yesterday. He had just run and run. His voice was going, and I mean, yeah.
So is the expectation now that they can beat, obviously Hungary beat Austria by 2-0 in their opening game, which was something of a surprise result, but do Iceland believe they can get three points against Hungary?
Yeah, of course. I mean, before the tournament started, that was the game where people looked at and saw a possibility for 3 points. And after the performance yesterday, if they put in another similar one against Hungary, I think 3 points will be in the bag.
Johan, thank you very much for coming on the podcast, and have a good day with the Iceland team again.
My pleasure. Thank you.
To keep up to date with the latest from UEFA Euro 2016, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.
Chris and Tom are still with me to go through all the events coming up in UEFA Euro 2016. Tom, Spain got a win over the Czech Republic, a narrow win in the end, 1-0. Gerard Pique with a late header, and they take on Turkey next, Spain. I mean, they'll be delighted to start with that 3 points.
Yeah, I don't think everything was 100% convincing for Spain. As you say, it was 3 points. The star man, as everyone knows, was Iniesta, who our man in the Spain camp, Graham Hunter, actually headlined his follow-up piece with, "Is there anything Iniesta can't do?"
His link-up play was just unbelievably good. His turning, I swear, he's actually getting sharper as he gets older. And his assist for the Pique goal was good. What didn't quite have you thinking that Spain are, you know, dead certs to get into the final from the performance?
I'm still not convinced that Morata's the man up front. I don't know. I mean, we saw a few years ago that they didn't deploy a striker at all, and they really...
Yeah, Cesc Fabregas used as a false nine, if we want to call it that type thing.
Well, you can call it that, Rob, if you want. I think, who knows? Maybe that's the way to go again. If they haven't got the target man to play that sort of style, then maybe they don't need one.
Yeah, well, they did bring on Arith Adarith as well. They had Nolito down the left. Chris, what did you make to the way that... Because I think that the back line in the midfield, you'd say that's almost certain for Spain from a selection point of view.
What I did think, Iniesta was just majestic again. And actually, we'll speak about a few others in the podcast. I think match day one was all about deep-lying midfielders, because I thought Toni Kroos was absolutely immense. And Luka Modric was fantastic for Croatia, yeah, in that sort of dictating things from a little deeper, and ultimately being the difference. And certainly Iniesta was for Spain, because that... The ball for Pique was just, I mean,
it was outrageously good. I think the thing with Morata, what I thought was his movement was very good. I think, because obviously, you know, if Iniesta's picking up the ball in midfield, you know a ball's going to come over the top and you know it's going to be near perfect and you have to do something with it. He just couldn't quite take his chances.
I think Spain will be there or thereabouts. I think the Czech Republic will be disappointed. I think in their hearts they'll know that Spain were the better team, but they held them for so long, and then, what, 3 minutes some time, Pique scores, and all of a sudden, from a fantastic start and a point against the reigning champions to losing 1-0 is, in a moment, it goes, and I think the Czechs will be disappointed.
One nice stat about the Czechs, actually, for you, Rob.
Yep.
Tomáš Rosický became the oldest and youngest player ever to represent his country.
Oh, very good. I like that stat.
It's not relevant to the performance or anything, but I just thought it was nice.
I did actually think he was their best player, and he was heartbroken. He came off, I think, after the goal went in, and he looked heartbroken because they were defending so deep and trying to keep him out. While we're talking about this game, then let's hear from Spain's goal scorer on the day, Gerard Piqué.
It's very important to score a goal which gives us the win, but we've all performed very well, especially because we managed to play strongly in defence and up front. If you can play and attack well, that means you open up the pitch and you can find a way through, even when they're all defending very deeply. That's the way you create chances, by creating spaces. Before I scored, Thiago had a great chance, but they managed to stop him just when he was about to shoot, and Morata also had one. I think our team created lots of chances and deserved to get the win.
So Spain's next game with 3 points on the board comes against Turkey, who lost their opening match against Croatia. And Chris went down to that Group D game to bring us this report.
Still 3 hours to go until kickoff. It's pouring with rain in Paris. But the Turkish and the Croatian fans are here. They're providing the colour. And as you can hear, plenty of noise already. It's 3 o'clock in Paris. The Parc des Princes is full. And the players are making their way out onto the pitch. Opening group game for Turkey and Croatia. And with Spain and Czech Republic, the two other teams, it's a very, very competitive section. Opening goal is an absolute beauty from Luka Modric. Best player on the pitch, one of the best midfielders in the world, and on the volley from the edge of the box, he has put Croatia ahead. The right-hand side of the Parc des Princes right now is going bonkers. Captain Dario Scherner is going to take this for Croatia. Centre of the goal, almost everybody is in the Turkey wall. But he's hit the bar. Brilliant effort behind, and Turkey are still in this game. Perfect start for Croatia then. Luka Modric's goal, the difference. They fully deserve it. He was fantastic, the Real Madrid midfielder. And in a very tough section on paper, they're off to the perfect start. Turkey will have to try again in their second game. Full time then. Turkey 0, Croatia 1.
Chris, a stunning goal from Luka Modric. One of the goals of the tournament so far, won it.
Privileged to see that. To be honest, privileged to see him perform. He was by far and away the best player on the pitch. Just everything went through him. Barely misplaced a pass. The volley was just, the technique was fantastic. And Croatia, Ivan Perisic said to UEFA.com afterwards, said that this is the best team he thinks Croatia have ever had. And the way they played, I wonder if they're dark horses. They have very good players in almost every position. You've got Modric and Rakitic, but then you've got the likes of Perisic, Mandzukic up front.
Yeah.
They were much the better team against Turkey. And I just wonder if Croatia, World Cup in 98 in France, they made the semi-finals, remember, lost to France. They're back on French soil. And again, they look like they have a team that I think could go quite deep into this tournament.
So Croatia take on the Czech Republic next, and it's Spain against Turkey. On to Group C now. Tom, Germany started the World Champions with a 2-0 win over Ukraine. It's Germany-Poland next, which we saw in qualifying for the tournament itself. But what did you make to Germany's start to the tournament?
Same old Germany, really, wasn't it? It was excellent. It wasn't all smooth for them, but they've got so many good players. And then players like Bastian Schweinsteiger comes off the bench. He comes off the bench in a regal fashion, I thought. And then he just jogs on. And then he broke into the box for the first time, I think, since 2005, was it?
He doesn't really do it anymore, does he? He's a lot deeper these days.
The way he finished that was serious technique.
You enjoyed that, didn't you?
I absolutely loved it. And then Wes Houlihan actually usurped him the following day with his technique. But still, Schweinsteiger takes the plaudits for me.
What about that goal line clearance from John Boateng as well off the line? That was pretty good.
Yeah, it was amazing. And I think the score then was it 0-0? Or
I think it was 1-0. I want to say it was 1-0. I think they'd taken the lead through Mustafi at that point. Yeah.
Obviously a crucial interception though at that point.
Chris, in the other game in that group, Poland against Northern Ireland. Poland just got the win. Milik, a player you picked out on the last show, actually got the only goal of the game. But they found it hard going against Northern Ireland side that we know are really good defensively.
Northern Ireland were very defensive. I think that's the way they're gonna play. For me, their game, I think they would probably have admitted it themselves, is their second one against Ukraine. And if they beat Ukraine, I think they'll fancy that they'd be through to the round of 16. So it's a massive game coming up for Michael O'Neill's team. The Poland goal was fantastic. It was a great team move, and Milik finished it so well.
He'd had chances before that. It was interesting, he even said to UEFA.com after that it was a mixed performance for him personally, because he had scored, but he had missed chances that he would normally have scored.
Lewandowski plays that a little bit ahead of him. I mentioned their partnership in qualifying, and already one of them has scored in the tournament. Poland's first ever win at a European Championships. And another team, I mentioned Croatia, I know a few minutes ago, you think if those two fire, then Poland could have a good tournament here. I wouldn't want to face them in the last 16. No. And that game against Germany is an absolute belter coming up.
Just going back to Milik and Lewandowski, I've got another stat for you, Rob.
Yes, please.
Give me a second here. It might be hard to explain this one, but Milik and Lewandowski combined league goals in the season just gone was, I think, 49 or perhaps 51. Wow. One or the other, but they are second. Which country is first in terms of two players combined league goals, 15-16?
That's a very good question.
Chris, any ideas?
Not Kane and Vardy.
No, not Kane and Vardy. Rob?
That would be close, though. That would be 49. I think Kane got 25, and I think Vardy got 24. So probably is 51.
Well, the winning duo have got 53.
Muller and...
No.
No, it's not Muller. Who is it? You're killing me here.
It's Ibrahimovic and Marcus Berg.
Ah, very good.
Thanks.
You're pleased with yourself.
It's that man in the corner here.
Yes, indeed. So, can Poland beat Germany? They did in qualifying.
I was just about to say, yes. I don't see why not. Although, I do think Germany, along with Italy, is one of the better performances of match day one. But Poland, having got the win, I think will have that security element. They already have 3 points on the board. So, if they draw in their opening game, they might have thought, OK, we don't want to lose here, we'll go for a point. But they have 3 points. I think they'll throw everything at Germany. I think that along with England-Wales, I mean, what a day at Euro that is.
Tom, I'm just looking at the other game in that group. So Ukraine-Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland finished with a match against Germany. You'd have thought they have to win against Ukraine. Do you think Northern Ireland in that second group game?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I actually predicted Northern Ireland in the first show. I think I predicted Northern Ireland to get a point against Poland. It was probably a bit too defensive, wasn't it? I could see why they were doing it. A point would have been a real stepping stone for them in the group.
Yeah,
they're going to have to win because I don't think they're going to get anything in the final game. So, yeah, I think 3 points is a must.
Okay, we're going to be hearing from Aaron Ramsey. We're going to be hearing from Eric Dyer later on in the show. But next, let's speak to Mark Pittman, our journalist based with the Wales team.
For the best coverage and the latest news, follow the @UEFA Euro account on Twitter.
Okay, joining us now on the podcast is our correspondent based with the Wales team, Mark Pittman. So, Mark, whereabouts are you and whereabouts is the Wales team based?
It's been good. It's a really nice, quiet little town. It's really been a really good base for the team, really. They didn't want to be anywhere too busy because it's quite a quiet town. The players have been allowed to walk around. They've been on the beachfront. And because Wales aren't playing any games anywhere near here, there aren't many fans around. So they've had a bit of quiet time and they haven't been stuck in the hotel. So it's been good.
Do you think that's a good thing, Mark, that away from all the excitement, we've seen how passionate the Wales fans are to be at a major international tournament. Do you think it's good to remove the players almost for a few days from the competition setting?
The contrast when they went to Bordeaux, I think it really hit them because they had been in quite a quiet town. I mean, when they got to Bordeaux, there were thousands of fans outside the hotel when they left for the game, and they just haven't had that here in the team base, which maybe other teams have in bigger cities. So I think it really hit home how big the support was because it was such a contrast. And yeah, I think it's been good. It's been good as a base as well because they have had that bit of privacy and that bit of quiet time too.
So England is up next for Wales after their 2-1 win over Slovakia. Here's what star midfielder Aaron Ramsey had to say after the game.
And it's one of the best atmospheres I've played in, probably the best. So the boys work their socks off and we got what we deserved in the end. We're quite difficult to score against. We work our socks off for each other and we have quality going forward. And we're enjoying every minute of it, so hopefully we can carry this on.
Mark, an incredible free kick from Gareth Bale, a late-ish goal as well to win it. I'm sure it was very special for those Wales fans to see that victory in their opening game.
It was, Rob. I mean, it's been a long, long time coming. I mean, Wales, generations of Wales fans have waited for a major tournament. The last one was the 58 World Cup, which is well documented. There's been great players over the years, Ryan Giggs, Ian Rush, even going back to the 70s with Joey Jones and John Toshack. They've never actually got this far, so it was always going to be a massive occasion. And the fans, I think, were determined that it wasn't going to be another day of Welsh football disappointment on that day. I think it was a bit of destiny that we were going to win that game.
Joe Allen also picked up the Man of the Match award, Mark, and I suppose, considering the nature of his role in a team, what he does can tend to go under the radar.
Yeah, he does the hard work. He's the engine in the middle of the park. And the thing with Joe, he works so hard. He's tenacious. He runs miles and miles and miles, breaks things up. But he's also got that quality on the ball as well. And he's just a real key player for the team. Obviously, people look at Bale and the end product that he gives. But the work that players like Joe Allen and Joe Ledley, when fit, what they put in it can't be underestimated, really.
Well, the match winner against Slovakia was Hal Robson-Kanu. Let's hear from the striker now.
You dream as a kid about scoring those sorts of goals. You know, I've got a habit of scoring winning goals for the nation. I think that's my third winning goal to have scored. So it's always nice when you can help the team in that way. But hopefully now we can build on that and really get some momentum in this tournament.
Mark, that was from your recent sit-down interview with Hal Robson-Kanu. Am I right in thinking he doesn't have a club at the moment?
Yeah, that's right. I actually asked Hal about that, how it sort of affected his preparation for the tournament, whether it was a bit of a distraction he didn't need or if it allowed him to really focus on Wales. And he is a free agent at the moment. He's got his own people are working back home to work out. Obviously, he's putting himself in the shop window now, scoring in the Euros. It's not going to do his chances of finding a new club any harm, I'm sure. It's not something he's really concerned about. I'm sure he will have offers. He's a very, very talented player. It's allowed him really to focus on Wales and the Euros, and that's what he's given 100% to at the moment.
I mean, there is so much focus on Gareth Bale at the moment, Mark, and I know, obviously, you've spoken to him. It seems like pressure doesn't seem to bother him, given what you hear from him when you speak to him and see him around the camp. Do you think he's a guy who feels pressure to any extent?
In the past, I would have said yes. I mean, I think Gareth Bale's a world superstar now, and he's up there with the Messis and Ronaldos. He's in that bracket. He's the world's most expensive footballer. I think the difference with Gareth compared to those other players is that the Ronaldos, the Messi, they never had a bad time in their careers, really. Because when Gareth went to Spurs, he struggled. And there was there were rumours that he was going to be leaving, he was going to go to Nottingham Forest, who were playing in the Championship, but he dug in and he made his name at Spurs, and then he shot up. So he's had a different path to the top, really. And obviously, he plays at Real Madrid week in, week out. So much pressure with that. And when he comes to the Wales camp, he's amongst, I think, the pressure's off a little bit. There's such a together team spirit in the camp. And like Gareth said, they're all brothers. And he just really enjoys being in that environment, I think. I think it's a little bit of a release from the pressures of Madrid.
Tom, Chris and myself are going to be talking more about England-Wales very shortly on the show. But how do you see that game going? And what do you think the expectation from the Wales team? What do they expect to get out of the game?
It's going to be tough, obviously. We know it's going to be tough. Our record against England is pretty awful in recent years. The last time Wales beat England was in 1984, I don't think any of the current squad are even born then. We know it's going to be tough. They've got quality players. But the dynamic of the game has changed following the first round of results. Wales have 3 points. England are on one. There's more pressure on England now to win. Because even if Wales do lose, they're going into the last match against Russia already on 3 points with the potential of getting six. So it's not as if Wales have to win this game on Thursday. I'm sure they will. Desperate to win. But there's a little bit of pressure off. There's a lot more pressure on England now than there is on Wales.
For the latest news from inside the team camps, go to Euro2016.com.
And a big thanks to Mark for coming on the show. Let's stay with Group B. Still with me, Tom and Chris, on the official UEFA Euro 2016 podcast. Let's talk about England. They got a 1-1 draw with Russia and they take on Wales next, a game all three of us will be attending on the 16th. We'll talk about that in a moment. But Tom, your thoughts on the performance against Russia? The consensus from the English media about the game is that, you know, England were perhaps a little wasteful in front of goal and should have won it given how dominant they were.
Yeah, I think so. I think it was a really encouraging performance for Roy Hodgson. He picked quite a brave side. He picked a side that even probably 10 days ago, 2 weeks ago, nobody would have foreseen. I think, in fact, it was in our predicted lineups on UEFA.com, one of the predictions that we got most wrong, in fact.
So when did you do the... So you predicted the team he was basically going to play?
Yeah, we did a piece predicting all the teams, and then we also did, in each match preview, we predict each team.
Okay.
I actually went through them today, and out of 24... We only got three right, so it's not great, but I think we'll improve as it goes
on.
It'll
get better.
Yeah.
So what were you most surprised about from an England selection point of view?
I was very surprised to see Adam Lallana starting. He's really come on since Klopp's taken over at Liverpool.
Do you think that's the thing that's sort of taken him up another level?
Yeah, he's shown himself to be able to track back, I think, and he's shown a lot more discipline than he has previously. I think before he would have had to have fitted in as almost a luxury creative player, and for yes. England there's too many of them already, perhaps. He was there to create, whereas now he's there to the odd spark, but he's also a disciplined performer who can help at the other end of the field as well.
With the England formation that Hodgson picked, I'm not quite sure he has the squad necessarily for it, because that formation anyway, with one up front, you need two wide players, and really only has one wide player in the whole squad.
In Sterling.
Now Marcus Rashford has played there for Manchester United under-18s. Most of his career, actually, he's played as a winger. But Hodgson doesn't have that many wingers. He didn't take Townsend in the end. He almost picked the squad, I thought, to play two up front. They were dynamic. They were quite exciting. But he doesn't actually have many options for the right and the left wide midfielder. So it'll be interesting to see what he does against Wales.
So do you think the team's naturally narrow?
Yeah, well, I just think if he plays that formation, I think he has to play Lallana and Sterling. I think the decision might be whether he plays Kane or Vardy up front. And I can see, and I certainly wouldn't have thought this 2 weeks ago, I can see Harry Kane potentially missing out, and he gives Vardy a go on his own if he continues with that formation.
Tom, what did you think to Rooney in midfield? It's been a big discussion point in England over the past season in particular, with Van Gaal at Manchester United using him in a deeper role.
I've always been a massive advocate of Wayne Rooney's performances. I think he remains England's best footballer in the strictest sense of the word. He might not be the most important player anymore in some ways, but I think in terms
of fundamental footballer type thing.
Yeah, technical ability, I think he's absolutely superb, and he still is. I don't know, maybe we're not giving Roy Hodgson enough credit. Maybe, I don't know, playing devil's advocate here. Maybe he's not picking what he thinks is perhaps necessarily his best team full stop. He was picking a team to take on Russia. He included a bit of pace against an ageing back line. I don't know what he's going to do against Wales. Maybe he'll bring a bit more technical ability into midfield. Jack Wilshere, perhaps, to counter your Ramsey, for example. Maybe he has tried to be flexible more than a lot of recent England managers who have decided on a formation and
they've
their team.
They've stuck with it.
And he's tried a few formations in the past couple of years, really. It's something that England have lacked in the past.
I thought it was a performance that deserved 3 points. And from Russia's point of view, with all of their injuries that they've had, they gave a debut to Neustadter. They had Golovin in central midfield. 18-year-old who hasn't played that position, club level at all. For Russia to get a point, given that they were outplayed, given all of that, I think they'll be absolutely delighted. And certainly the happier of the two teams with their point, if not with their performance.
Let's hear from Eric Dyer, who of course scored that wonderful free kick for England.
I don't think we can let a goal in the 90 something minutes disappoint us too much, because I thought we were fantastic up to that point, and there's so many positives to take. I think obviously the only negative is that we couldn't see the game out, which is disappointing, but we'll look at it and try not to make the same mistake again.
Eric Dyer speaking there after the game, and he was very good for England on the day. And we're all off to England-Wales.
We're all going, aren't we?
Yeah.
I don't think we're on the same train, unfortunately, from Paris. I'm on the work train.
Yes.
And yourself and Chris are on the off-duty train.
We're technically off-duty, Tom, for the England game. But don't worry, we'll be coming back into the International Broadcasting Centre to work in the evening. Are we going to do that, Chris, or...?
And we'll wave to you in the stand. It's funny that all three of us are there, and it only holds 30-odd thousand.
Is it 30-odd thousand?
Yeah.
I think the whole town is quite a small town, so I've heard. Somebody told me it was the same size as Tipton in England.
Wow.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with Tipton.
I'm not familiar with Tipton, no. Chris, are you?
I believe it's in might be in the West Midlands, where Thomas's family are from. And the whole town of Lens can fit into the stadium.
You love this kind of stat where you fit people into a stadium.
That is unbelievable.
You did this on the last show.
But that is incredible.
No, that is quite good. That is incredible. I'll let you have that. Okay, let's switch our attention now to Group A. The holders, France, in action last Friday. Tom and I both attended the opening game of the tournament. France against Romania. The Stade de France was the venue. Here's my report from that game as I caught up with supporters ahead of kickoff.
I'm Nathanael, hello, and I support France, yeah. The French team is good for the moment because we have made a good preparation match. We have our chance to win the competition.
How excited are you for the first game at the Stade de France?
I'm very excited because I'm with many friends here.
And who is the most important player for France?
Griezmann, because he has... a good technique and he is rapid.
My name is Jo and I support France.
Do you think France can win the European Championship?
Yes, I'm sure because the competition is in France with the supporters.
What's the atmosphere going to be like inside the stadium tonight?
There is a good atmosphere in all the country. On the radio, on the newspaper.
Everywhere?
Everywhere, yes.
Prediction?
For tonight, I think the French win 3-0.
And what about you?
2-0.
Even as the France team came out just for their warm-up, the noise level's absolutely unbelievable inside the Stade de France. It's all blue, red and white, apart from one bright yellow corner where the Romanians have made themselves very much at home. The players are warming up, we're getting close to kickoff, and the crowd cannot wait.
She can, Giroud! The first goal of these European finals. Happy steps, and he scores superbly. Stanko has equalised 1-1 in Paris. Ponte.
Incredible moment, because into the last minutes of the game, Dimitri Payet from about 25 metres out has just pinged it into the top corner, and France are about to break Romania's hearts. What a goal from Payet. We're seeing it on the big screens now, and Didier Deschamps cannot hide his delight on the touchline. So in the end, Tom, I mean the main talking point was Dimitri Payet was on the front of every single newspaper in France the next day, and he was in tears at the end of the game. I don't think he could quite believe what he'd done to win the game.
It was phenomenal, wasn't it? It really was. And I have to say that it was one of my low moments as a reporter, because I didn't actually see the goal, unfortunately.
What do you mean?
Well, I was looking down...
We were in the stadium.
Yeah, I was in the stadium, that is correct. I was looking down typing at the time, Rob, because I was there working, writing a report.
Because it was the 89th minute.
That's right, yeah. So it sometimes gets a bit frantic at that moment, so I didn't see that. I actually thought Payet's taken all the headlines. I thought Olivier Giroud was... It's a very frustrating night for him, I know. He missed a few chances. I thought he did a job, and... Speaking to our France reporter, he says that Deschamps has never made any bones about the fact that he needs a physical presence up front.
Right.
He did that job. He worked perhaps more than we're accustomed to seeing him do for Arsenal. I've got a sneaky feeling it's going to be a little love affair throughout the tournament. I've just got this feeling that by the end of it...
He might be the guy.
Yeah, I think he's going to be the guy.
I was speaking to one of the stats team after the game, and they said Kante's numbers were just absolutely incredible in almost every department.
Claudio Ranieri always says that he plays, I think, three midfielders. Kante, Drinkwater and Kante.
Yeah, it is like having another guy in the middle. So France take on an Albania side who will be without Loric Sana, who was sent off in a 1-0 defeat to Switzerland. Fabian Schär with the only goal of the game, Chris. What did you make to Switzerland's opening? They take on Romania next on the 15th.
I thought they looked really solid. Jan Sommer did have a good game. He's a very fine goalkeeper. But
he made some unbelievable saves.
He did.
To keep it 1-0.
And Albania, given that they had Sana sent off for 10 men, you know, really attacked, actually. It was a really bright and entertaining game, I thought. But, you know, I think Switzerland, having got off to that good start, they'll be looking at that showdown with France on match day 3 to potentially win the group. That will be a great game. And from Sana's point of view, you have to feel a bit sorry for him. It was definitely 2 yellow cards, but he's spent a lot of his career in Marseille and he now misses going back to the Velodrome of Albania because he'll be suspended.
OK, so let's talk about our potential surprises for the second round of group games. We did this last week. Tom, you thought the Northern Ireland would get a point against Poland. Not quite. Chris, what did you go for on match day 1? I can't remember.
I was 3 minutes away. I said Czech Republic would get a point against Spain.
They almost did, actually. Not too far off. OK, so Tom, what do you think could be a surprise result for the next set of matches?
I'm just scanning the fixtures as we speak, actually, Rob. I mean, I have prepared for this, obviously. Let's say that I think I'm not going to go for Northern Ireland again because that would be boring. I think Sweden will beat Italy. There you go.
Think Sweden will beat Italy.
Yeah, but I mean, my predictions, not only did that not go well, I think you asked me, was it last time for a player to look out for the tournament?
Yes.
Mario Gomez, I think I went for.
Yeah, basically the lesson of this is don't listen to anything that Tom says on the show.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Chris, what could be a surprise result for you for the next set of matches?
Same group. I think Ireland will get something from that Belgium game.
Okay. Guys, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. And we'll be back for the start of the third set of matches on June the 19th.
To keep up to date with the latest from UEFA Euro 2016, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or follow us on SoundCloud.